a new day. Yes, it is.
For 12 Pack Radio, get excited, y'all.
Get your memorabilia pants on, everybody. This is the last Pac-12 football season in the history of man. This is 12-Pack Radio. We're excited to cover it. I'm Brian Conger. Thank you for joining us. This is a Sharp College Football Podcast. It's like week zero right now, but it's going to be week one since when you listen to this. Right now, we're watching USC's defense get kind of a little bit embarrassed in the first quarter by San Jose State. We'll keep an eye on that as we go. I'm joined by Rob Barron, as always. We're going to break down every game for you from the beginning. At FCS, we'll talk about it. Don't worry about it. We got to... Rob, okay, we did the Pac-8 in terms of our team previews, which is pretty good considering the Pac-12 was the Pac-8, now it's the Pac-4. So we got most of our team previews out. We'll try to flush out, talk about some of these teams when we go into the preview. So yeah. It's a little bit of a hybrid episode, but I'm excited because college football is here. How are you, Rob?
I mean, I'm excited. I mean, we are watching live actual Pac-12 football as we speak. USC is currently driving again. There have been some hiccups, but it's early, right? Like, you know, like don't small sample size. Don't draw too many conclusions, you know, too early, because we also don't know much about opponents yet. But yeah, I couldn't be more excited for college football to be here, even as we sit through the last ride of the Pac-12, right? Like these. It's almost kind of like sad seeing these like Pac-12 network commercials and like the Pac-12 conference commercials on Pac-12 network. You're just like, oh no, like we're still doing these. It's like they had to set them all to that like Sarah McLachlan song that they do for like the Pets.
or they should just do, even, you know, like normally a game will happen in both commercial that they do. Oh, just plug in commercials from the rest of the Pac-12. Like, you know, we could be creative. We can open the studio space here and explore it if we really want to. And look, this USC game that's going on right now, great reminder of the spin doctors that happened at the beginning of preseason, right? Tackett Curtis is going to start at linebacker. He's the first linebacker in the last 20 years to start. He must be awesome. Like, well, like Eric Gentry and Shane Lee were your linebackers last year, guys. So I don't know if you really had much of a choice. And then three drives in, it's like, he got replaced. You know, Eric Gentry is back in the game, starting in his rightful position as a tight end that happens to play a linebacking spot. So we'll go down there. I mean, let's just get into this, right? Because these episodes get really long, especially in the beginning, right? We have like 12 games to get through when it comes to the opening season and week one. So let's start off right off the bat. So what we're going to do, if you're watching this, the four teams we didn't cover, we're going to get to them at the end. So I apologize, Florida fans. I apologize because you have the best game of the week, but we're going to cover that. You'll be first of the last four at the end, but we're going to get that to the end. And what we're going to try to do with these, Rob, is if your team is playing an FCS game, we're not going to break down the spread. What we're going to say is, here's what we're looking for, you know, as we watch these games, kind of, you know, if your offensive line sucks, are they actually doing pretty well? You know, those types of things where you can at least plant a stake in the ground moving forward. But let's start Friday, September 1st at 8:00 p.m. on CBS Sports Network. The Stanford Cardinal take on Hawaii. They go to the island. And of course, like the, you know, devastating news out of the island. So like, hopefully, and I know like it's played a different place, but really, you know, this, I'm hoping that there will be some inspiration from this game, you know, from the team and the way that they play. It's also something just to keep in mind as we're watching this here, Rob, you know, Stanford is a 7-point favorite on the road, and Hawaii, like if your team has played in Hawaii, you freaking know. Not an easy, like, you know, this Hawaii team is still putting itself back together, but they do play well at home. What do we got in this matchup, Rob? What are you looking for here?
So, I mean, I think one of the things to keep an eye on here is like one of the things to keep in mind here is Hawaii still plays tonight. Like they're in a lightning delay in Nashville, but like they have the advantage. Now, of course, if you're Stanford, you actually get some tape, but like you have the same coaching staff, you know, as last year at Hawaii anyway. But you know, Hawaii's going to have a chance to get like some of the first game jitters and everything out, you know, before they play Stanford. I mean, the thing to watch out here, I mean, is you're going to, if you're a Stanford fan, is you're going to want to keep an eye on like, because you're going to get, this is where you get your totally new coaching staff in place. Who's, you know, how, like last year in FCS, Troy Taylor's team was excellent at running the football. That was their bread and butter. We haven't seen Stanford run the football very well in a very long time. I do expect them to run the ball and run the ball pretty well in this game. But the question, of course, is like by how, you know, like how well do they do it? Hawaii, of course, is still digging themselves out of the massive hole that Todd Graham left them in.
Hires matter, man. Hires matter.
I know. But their defense, I mean, like their defense was horrendous. I mean, just Hawaii's defense was horrendous last season. 128 in beta rank overall. Very bad against the run and the pass. So Stanford, like you'd like to see them be able to move the ball around quite a bit in this game, and you'd like to be able to see them establish the run game. That, like I said, like that's going to be Troy Taylor's bread and butter. Now you flip around to the other side of the football. Stanford finished at 91 in beta rank last year, and they were horrible. They were at 88 on defense. Now Hawaii's offense is at 104 overall. No big run pass split for them. For Stanford, like you'd like to see them be able to clean up their run defense last season. They were 128 in beta rank against the run. They were terrible at stopping the run.
That's awful. So 128 is like, and that's opponent adjusted. Yeah. TV, y'all. Like that's pretty bad.
So you'd like to see them, like you'd really like to see. Yeah. Like, you know what? I was tweeting like, cause like Jaden Ott somehow ended up on like everybody's radar. Right. Coming into this year, and it's not that he's bad. It's just that like almost 31% of his yards came against Arizona, and then like in just one game, like everybody's like he's amazing. I'm like a third of his yards came in one game, and then also they ran against Stanford, who was horrendous.
Well, like so, just to put things in perspective, so there was like this really famous, I think it was on like McSweeney's or so. It was one of those like off, you know, oddball websites. And hopefully McSweeney's isn't like problematic. If not, we'll cut this out.
No, I hope not. I
mean, okay, all right, good.
I haven't heard that.
You never
yet.
Know now. And it was somebody writing basically about how many like fifth graders it would take to beat him up in a fight.
Oh, yeah.
Like how many, like,
I've heard this thought exercise. Past, like, 32.
Yeah, exactly. That's basically Arizona's run defense, yeah. Right? Like how many offensive defensive linemen would it take to actually bring down Jaden Knott? And it was a lot. So yeah. Is Jaden Knott the running back for Hawaii now?
No. Sorry. I was just talking about like Stanford's run defense was really bad. And like they also that's another place Cal put up some rushing yards. But for the Stanford defense, like what you want to see from them is in particular improvement in stopping the run. Like Hawaii was at 98 in effective rush, 97 in effective pass. I wouldn't say that there's like anything overwhelming to like look out for here in this game. They're only favored, Vanderbilt's favored by 17 against Hawaii. Stanford, I mean, of course it is also on the road, while Vanderbilt's got them at home, but you know, like Stanford's only favored by 7. Beta Rank has it a little bit closer, but of course Beta Rank's projections don't see the coaching staff change. I like Stanford, you know, versus that 7 overall number. I think Troy Taylor's going to bring in some big changes, and look, I mean, I think their roster's thinner than maybe we thought, and I think that there's probably still problems in the front 7, but I think a better coaching staff is probably what the doctor ordered, in large part to get Stanford at least to being like more respectable than they were last year. I'm gonna hold off on saying good, but like at the very least to like a bad Power 5 team, I think they can make that jump pretty easily with Troy Taylor.
The thing that, like, so initially when I saw this line, I thought, oh, Stanford going to Hawaii. Good luck with that. But obviously Hawaii's not what it's been in the past. Like when Timmy Chang was there, they won like 10 games, yeah. And went to a BCS bowl. The thing that really gives me pause is the exact point that you made where it's can Stanford stop the run? And when you take a look at their defense, the one thing that they've done well is recruit size on the defensive line, and their linebackers are still good. Like they yeah. have consistently brought in good players, and a lot of those guys didn't leave. So what was, I guess, the two questions I have, and I know you rattle off the numbers, but what was Hawaii's number in the past, like passing offense and defense, passing offense and rushing offense, because I'm just curious how those things match up.
So they don't have a split. They were at 98 in effective rush, 97 in effective pass, okay. 104 overall. But also, to be frank too, is like, as we talk about, I mean, this Hawaii team should be a little bit better than they were last season. I think they have, I mean, just because I think that the roster hole that Timmy Chang inherited was freaking enormous. And I yeah. do think that like, we should expect them to have more holes plugged in the ship this time around, particularly on defense. So, I mean, I'm interested to see this because, like I said, like, I mean, it's a pretty interesting tell that Vanderbilt is basically, you know, if you take out the home, like on a neutral field, Vanderbilt's about 15 and Stanford, you know, Vegas has Stanford at like 9.5, like on a neutral, you know, like that tells you even where, and I don't think Vegas has like Vanderbilt projected as some amazing team coming into this year at all. It's not like Vegas is like, oh man, we're all in on Clark Lee. Like Vegas has doubts about the Stanford team too.
Yeah. All right. My biggest worry would be the secondary for Stanford, because I think they're just paper thin.
Yeah. And Dwayne Akeem is not there anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big problem. And if Hawaii like was at 97 last year, you know, the odds that they really put that together, I'm a little bit skeptical on that. I just don't trust Stanford going on like a basically halfway around the world to play Hawaii. I'm going to take the 7. I'm not super confident on this. When I first saw the line, I was really excited about it. And then when I really broke it down, I just thought like, oh, well, actually the front 7 of Stanford will be pretty good. I'm just curious. The thing that I'm going to look out for is can Patu stay on his feet? And how bad is that line? Because Stanford has some interesting players on the offensive line, but they don't have any depth at all. And if Hawaii comes out like, you know, on fire, which they've done in the past, especially those games, the first games at home, the defensive line, the front 7, they're aggressive. They can do stuff. They can make you nervous. So I'll take the 7. I'm not a big fan of this, but I just Stanford on the road, putting the offense together against Timmy Chang. You know, like you mentioned, this Hawaii team in general should be a little bit better than they were. I'll take Hawaii. What about you, Rob?
I'm gonna take Stanford. I'm gonna buy in. I mean, some of it is that I get to peek at like the FCS stats for Troy Taylor, Sacramento State last season. And I think that the offense is going to be a lot better than we think. And that's not, I mean, they were horrible last year and they haven't been really good in a while. But I think the offense has a shot to be really respectable. And Hawaii's defense, like I said, like at 128, like it's still hard. Like, I think that's a long, as we're watching sometimes with USC and people that are just like, oh, we just rebuild out of the portal. Like, it's hard to rebuild defense quick.
Yeah.
And so I think Stanford's going to be able to run the ball. I'll take Stanford.
Okay. All right. Saturday, September 2nd at noon on the Pac-12 Network, we have Oregon taking on Portland State. This is that stereotypical, you know, play the FCS team, get all your cobwebs, you know, swept up, get things in order before you start playing the tough teams. So we won't spend too much time on this. I mean, obviously Oregon returns Bo Nix. The offense is going to be solid. The defense is really where I'm going to be looking, because if Portland State puts up like 21 points, I'm going to be like, oh my gosh, this stuff hasn't been fixed. I don't expect that. I do think this defense is going to be better than it was last year. Second year, Lanning, you know, kind of made his bones on the defensive side. But that is really the area where I'm like, how many points are we going to give up to this Portland State team? What do you think, Rob?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like this Portland, I mean, like the, everything that you are going to want to know in this game is like, what should we think about this? What should we think about this defense, right? Like coming into this year. And truthfully, you know, like this Portland State team, they were in a pretty tough Big Sky last year, but they were at 78 overall in the FCS. Offensively, they ran the ball much better than they passed it. They were at 32 in effective rush and 70 in effective pass. They had a really bad defense last year, so that's a bit of a watch out. Like Oregon should be able to put up points at will. But coming into this game, you know, what you'd really like to see is you'd like to see Oregon clean up what they were doing defensively. Now, they were the least bad of the bad defenses last season in the Pac-12 amongst the teams that had good offenses and bad defenses. They're at 73 in effective pass. Portland State's probably not going to challenge that very much, but they were only at 27 in effective rush. You'd like to see them really, and they should absolutely be able to shut down Portland State's running game here. So there's not much to see in this game. The only thing like we often talk about with FCS games is like, it's only news if it's close.
I think the offensive line is going to be fine. Yeah. I mean, you know, say what you want about Cristobal. Like that was the crux of how he built the team. So you're going to see that for a while. They're going to continue recruiting there. The offense is going to be the same, but that defense, can we actually I guess the other thing too is Popo and Taki. I think it's Tamiani. The two big guys in the middle, basically. Can they just wreck havoc? Because they were good. Like, and they have some pedigree to them. Like, can they actually be what they can be? There were some injuries last year. I'm curious what that looks like. And then after that, it's just, you know, who's starting basically in the secondary, and can they stop the pass? But like you mentioned, I don't think Portland State's going to challenge them there much.
And a little bit like, what does the offense look like under Stein? I mean, I doubt they're going to roll out everything. I mean, they're not pulling out all the stops in this game, right? Like, they'll be saving some stuff, you know. But I'll be interested to see what the offense looks like to under Stein. That'd be something to keep an eye on.
A real fun game to keep a lookout for would be at 12:30 p.m. on ABC, so national audience. Boise State goes to Seattle to take on the Huskies. Washington is a 14.5-point favorite, so you got that hook there. And I'm curious what this Boise State team, like what your projections are for that, because we know what Washington is, right? The offense is going to be really good. The defense, I mean, it was a mess last year. How it's going to be, I think, less of a mess, but I still think it's going to be bad. But I'm just curious, like, this Boise State team is decent. They had a decent year in the Mountain West. What can they exploit from this defense of Washington?
Well, so we have, so Boise's projected at number 70 overall in beta rank. Like, the Mountain West has been down for a little bit, and Boise's still been good within the Mountain West, but like, the Mountain West overall hasn't been that good. So like, you don't have to be that great to be good in the Mountain West. Beta rank has this at 17 in the projection model, Washington favored. But the thing to keep an eye on, I think, here is like, Boise last year, their offense graded out at 67 overall. They were at 37 in effective rush. So like, I'm interested to see, can Boise throw the ball at all? Because that was really Washington's problem last year. They couldn't stop the pass at all. 113 in effective pass. But Washington was only at 30 in effective rush. So Boise with 37 in effective rush, like, I'm interested to see, like, can Boise run the football here? If they can, that might open things up for them. So if you are Washington, what you'd really like to see, of course, is you know, that you would like to see them slow, like, you'd like to be able to slow down Boise's run game. And I don't know if you like necessarily want to rely on your pass defense, but you definitely like to put Boise in a position where they're uncomfortable, even if it's your weaker suit.
Yeah.
And then I would say, Boise's defense last year, Andy Avalos is a pretty good defensive coach on his own. They were at 42 in beta rank last year on the defensive side of the football. 34 in effective rush versus 54 in effective pass. That's not the split you want versus Washington, of course, who was number one in effective pass last year and is likely, of course, to throw it around and light him up again. I just think defensively, they're going to be good enough to make it at least fun to watch for a little bit. The question, of course, like, if you're a Washington fan, is like, this isn't a great offense last year. They might finish somewhere. I mean, even if they have improvement on the offensive side of the football, they might finish somewhere in the like 50s range. You know, like, if you're Washington, you absolutely need to see your defense slow them down this year. And you like, Washington needs to cover this, like, 14 points versus Boise. Like, Washington, if you're a Washington fan and like, Boise's able to put up points and like, put this to like 10, like, that would be pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah, give me Washington. The thing I'm looking at here is, they're going to be able to throw the ball around, right? Like, I mean, that's the biggest thing. So where points aren't going to be a problem. The one thing to keep in mind is Cam Davis is injured, so he's out for the season, ACL tear, in the preseason, which is a total bummer. But they have people behind him, Dylan Johnson, Daniel, and they got a Richard Newton, who I've always liked. So I think the running game, but like, right, this offense isn't built on the running game. The offense is pass, and holy Moses, you look down this line, you're like, they're going to get their points. So I was hesitant, right, because it's Boise and like, you have that name, right? And it's the David and Goliath. I just think Washington's going to put up so many points on this team where they're going to push it out of the way. And I'm not a big fan of the defense, but I just think that they're able to stretch that and really force Boise to throw the ball a lot more. And I know that could be good or bad,
right?
But I just think they're going to put this game out of reach against a Mountain West team that's good but not great. And that's what they should do at home.
Yeah, I like Washington too in this game. I mean, I think that They're going to put up enough points to like force Boise to try to stretch to keep up with them. And I just don't think Boise can throw to keep up with them, even as bad as Washington's pass defense was last year.
Yeah. Next game. What a stupid game. I love these games. 1 o'clock PM on ESPNU. Cal goes to Denton, Texas, going up north. It says North Texas, basically Dallas. It's the Dallas suburbs up north. Yeah. To face the Mean Green, if I recall, the North Texas Mean Green. New coaching staff, as I recall. I know you've been kind of diving more into some of these teams in the offseason and what they are. Cal is a 7-point favorite on the road against a power, what do they call it? Group of five team. I mean, they just named their quarterback, right? It's the TCU transfer. It's Sam Adams. So I could go back and look. He's going to run the ball everywhere. Right. You're not going to throw it much.
Right. I mean, this game's interesting. Like last season, if these two teams had played, like North Texas is probably the favorite in that game. Not by a lot. But North Texas had a good offense last year. They have a good quarterback in Austin Ani. To keep an eye on. He is also fairly mobile, but can throw the ball as well. Like they were a dangerous offense, 47 overall in beta rank. They sat at 43 in drive efficiency. This is going to be an interesting matchup, I think, versus Cal here, because like Cal's defense finished at 57 in beta rank last year. That's not great. I'm not sold on what Wilcox is doing on the defensive side of the football anymore. I think North Texas is going to be able to move the football and put up points in this game. I think what's interesting is like North Texas defense was really bad, 101 overall. Cal finished offensively at 87 last season, really bad. I think the new quarterback in there could potentially help. The new offensive coordinator could potentially help. I think this game's a lot closer to a toss up than people think. Because North Texas wasn't as bad as their record last year. Like North Texas, like had a bad record. They fired their coach. New coaching staff comes in. Of course, it's the guy that was like the offensive coordinator for Washington State, but he's not calling plays, at least for North Texas. But I think if that system that he runs with a different offensive play caller, I think can really work. At least it did at Incarnate Word. So I don't know. I mean, I'm hesitant to take Cal at 7 points. I know that sounds like I'm just dumping all over Cal. It's just really hard. Because I've actually watched being the college football addict that I am, I've watched North Texas and like that quarterback is pretty good.
Oh, that worries me. And I apologize, Cal fans. I mixed up our founding fathers, Samuel Adams, with our other founding father, Samuel L. Jackson, who broke many barriers on his own. So Sam Jackson is the starting quarterback for Cal. Okay. So I was going to take Cal because Cal in these non-conference games have been pretty good. The power of the group of five team gives me a little bit more hope. I do think that Jackson is going to get a lot of points in this game. My worry now, when you're talking about North Texas and them being able to put up points, that worries me because I think they are. If you think that this offense is good, I think that this defense is going to have some problems. So I'll take the points. I'll take North Texas. Man.
Yeah, Austin Ani, last season, like he didn't have a great completion percentage, right? He was only 56% completion percentage, but he did get 8.6 per. But he added... Oh yeah, I guess they only added 52 yards on the ground, but like they put up points last season. They ran the ball pretty well. They had a couple ball carriers that had 800 yards, both of whom were sophomores. They had another ball carrier who's also a sophomore who had 600 yards, and another sophomore who had 246 yards. Like they can move the football around. So like I don't know. I mean, it sounds like one of those ones where you're like, oh, you should just automatically take the Power Five team, but like it's on the road. Cal does dumb things occasionally, and I can't buy into this defense. I think they're going to give up some points here. Like, I think Cal's going to find themselves in a tough game. I mean, Vegas does too. It's only one possession.
Yeah, and then when you take a look, I guess one more thing to add to this is it's early in the season. and there is no continuity to this defense. This is all transfers. It's UNLV, San Diego State, a Clemson backup that has that never played a dime basically at Clemson, a Utah transfer that didn't see the field in Salt Lake City. Like, I could see them trying to figure some stuff out, right? Yeah. Especially with a dangerous quarterback. Okay. All right, I feel a little bit better about that because I came in thinking, okay, you know, Cal on the road, whatever, they're going to be able to put up points. But yeah, this is kind of a duct tape and chicken wire defense, and betting against them early is probably the right thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't take North Texas on the money line, but like, you give me 7 points, like, I'm going to take the mean green.
San Jose State scored again, by the way. It's 14-21 at the half. Dumb. Against like, USC. I love dumbest. It.
Oh, man. Like,
Alex Grinch is a beautiful, beautiful human being. Just keep him around while you move to the Big Ten. Why don't you, USC? Let's see what happens on that. I'm sure it's a great idea. Lots of games to come up, including the USC game against Nevada, which who the heck knows what that line is going to be. We're going to get to that right after this. And right after that, this means me betting the second half line USC game.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
5-1-0, declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 3-1 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back, everyone, to 12-Pack Radio. We are going through week one games. We'll get into season four here. I feel like this is a little choppy. We normally do the different matchups between the different units, Rob. So I'll try to direct this conversation in a couple ways here. I'm going to skip over this USC Nevada game for now. The line, by the way, is 38. That was the opening line, but the line headed into tonight. And of course, USC is playing San Jose State. They are winning by 7 at the half. Let's, in the meantime, go to Washington State. This is going to be at 4:00 p.m. on Saturday on CBS Sports Network. Washington State, a 12-point favorite on the road at Colorado State at Canvas Stadium. Canvas Stadium. I thought Colorado State was in Colorado Springs. This is Fort Collins.
It is in Fort Collins. Air Force is in the Springs.
Oh, snap. Totally forgot about that. Okay. 12-point favorite. Obviously, some coaching changes on both sides here. You have a new offensive coordinator at Washington State. Second year coach here as a Nevada coach, moved down to Colorado State, and he's building his program there. Let's talk about what Colorado State is, Rob, and then let's try to do those matchups like the running defense versus the running offense, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So Colorado State finished at 127 in beta rank last year, even after the Norvell hire. They really struggled on the defensive side of the football, 106 there. Offensively, they were just horrible. They were at 127 overall in beta rank on offense last year. This Colorado State team, like they did invest the money. They have the new brand spanking new stadium in place. And they did go out and hire Norvell from Nevada, which was a good hire. Their roster appears to be in a lot more trouble that I think a lot of people thought coming into or through last year and then even coming into this year. Beta Rank has this right now. It has Colorado State projected to improve up to 124, but has Washington State projected at 54. Got a 94% win probability for Washington State there and about 20 points on the road.
I scoff at the robots. I scoff at the robots, Rob. I scoff at math.
Okay.
That's a big spread. That's a big spread between what beta rank has and what the actual line is here.
I know.
Let's deep there. And there's a couple reasons here that are more like coaching development related, right? So second year under Norvell, he brought some of his players with him to Nevada. And just from what I've read about Colorado State, they feel better more about the continuity and some of the players that they've been able to bring in, where they think they can make a little bit of noise. I'm curious about that because when I take a look at Washington State, I mean, I don't trust their quarterback. I trust their defense, but their defense lost some really good players last year.
That's true.
They're on the road at Elevation, and I know, yeah, look, it's hard to play at Washington State. I know that, but they are playing at Colorado State. I think this game could get a little hairy. Like, this isn't a, yes, Colorado State is on par with Washington State. I think that the talent is different there, but it's not like Washington State has one of the best talented rosters in the Pac-12. I just think that this can be one of those opening games where it takes Washington State a little bit of time to kind of make those gears start moving, and I just don't trust the quarterback play. Like even against a bad defense, I think this could get a little bit weird. The counterpoint to that is they have a new offensive coordinator, so this offense could be significantly better than it was last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the problems last season was the offensive coordinator just wasn't very good. But I am with you. I also have questions about Cam Ward. I think that they should be, like, offensively last year they were a bad Power 5 offense, 62 overall. Now they did have a significant run pass split. They were at 34 in effective pass, 87 in effective rush. Now Colorado State did not defend the run well. They were at 120 in effective rush last season and 67 in effective pass. So at least they match up fairly well. I'm interested to see though, because I do think Washington State is smart enough to run the football if it's there, against Colorado State. And it certainly was last season. And then I think on the other side of the football, I mean, this offense was just horrendous last season. 127 overall, 123 in effective pass, 129 in effective rush. Now, Washington State's defense was at 35 overall. Even I think with the player losses, I like the coaching staff enough. Like, even if they drop down to like 50 overall in beta rank, like, I still think they're going to be good enough to really throw a wrench in what Colorado State's doing offensively. I mean, I like Norvell's, you know, I like to hire, I mean, he's got Hal Mumme's kid calling the offense. So, like, they're going to look to throw the football. But I do think that, I mean, I do think that Dickert, you know, I think he runs a really solid defense. I think he's got a good defensive coaching staff, even though they did lose their DC to Arizona State. So, I mean, what was the line again from Vegas?
12.
I'm going to take Wazoo here. Like, I think the new offensive coordinator is a big thing for them.
Yeah. I think the better move here, now that I'm looking at this, so the over, the total in this game is 56, which isn't super high. I think that's basically average when it comes to an over. I just think this game could get sloppy.
Yeah.
And Colorado State might not be able to put up points because, look, I don't think Washington State's defense is going to be as good as it was last year, but it will still be well coached and they'll be able to know what's going on in the game. I trust the coaching staff on that. And I just trust Cam Ward to throw some picks and do some dumb stuff. Fair. So it's possible. Fair. It's possible that this game is like 28-10 or something stupid. I think that's probably the better move. I'm going to make a note of that here just because I don't trust both these teams on offense yet. So I'm going to take the 12. I don't like it. Like, I'm not going to bet this game. I'm just going to watch it for fun, but I will likely be on that under. I'm just curious to see what these offenses are like. And, you know, if they beat me this time, well, shame on me. You know, it's just starting the season here. You're taking Wazoo on the road, Rob. Okay.
I know. Like, I don't trust Cal, but Colorado State was so bad. Like, they really have to prove it to me. They were the worst teams in college football last year.
And we saw Washington State live take some of the town on the road.
Yeah, that was also an experience.
I think the thing here is if Colorado State, if you're a Wazoo fan, if Colorado State moves the ball at all, that's a problem because your defense should be able to stop.
Oh, and if you're not really able to move the ball either, like, all that much, like, Washington State should be able to, like, with the new offensive coordinator, like, you want to see Cam Ward comfortable and making throws, not like last year where it was just like, are these guys, like, it parts of that Wisconsin game, it genuinely looked like he and his wide receivers actually were like running a different play. Like, it was bad.
We'll find it. Could be chicken and egg, right? Is it Ward or was it the coordinator? Right. We'll find out here.
Well, hopefully, I mean, look, it turns out that if Ward is still struggling, it's time to go to another quarterback.
Here's the game that worries me, Rob. Saturday at 7:30 p.m. on ESPN, UCLA hosts Coastal Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
UCLA should win this game. UCLA, I've had my tail between my legs multiple seasons in a row. 14 and so here's the problem. So it's 14.5 is the spread. Chip Kelly gives zero craps about non-conference games. That's the worry here. I'm curious though, like obviously Coastal Carolina, Chadwell goes to, you know, their coach ends up going to Liberty, the guy that built that program. A lot of teams left this Coastal Carolina team. This is not a returning production team, if I recall. I'm curious what the numbers say on that. What does the model say about Coastal Carolina? And then we'll try to match up the matchups here.
So it has them projected at 74. It's got UCLA projected at 21. I think to your point on how much returning production they have, in the last update on their... Now, they do have a decent amount. Now, they did lose the quarterback, you're right. But they have 20. They're at 22 on offense, 16 on defense and returning production. That actually does help them project up a little bit. Betarank has this at 16 points for UCLA. Which I feel pretty good about. I mean, I'm going to tell you why. So, I mean, to your point, you're not wrong. I do think that Chip Kelly does not care fundamentally. And I do think that there's some potential where, like, at least in week one, there's some potential that, like, the offense has some growing pains, I think, early on in the season, because they're going to have a new quarterback, you know, in place. But what I think, here's why I think that, like, Coastal Carolina's defense stunk last season.
Hold on one sec. Are we sure Grayson McCall is gone? I'm pretty sure he's back.
Oh, he's back? Okay. Sorry. So he's back.
Yeah.
But they were at 120 on defense at Betarank last season. UCLA was number 8 on offense. UCLA was at number 4 in effective rush last season. We've talked about this, like, we fully expect them to be able to run the football plenty well still. Coastal Carolina was 102 in effective rush. Like, you could definitely run against them. But they were at 127 in effective pass last season. So, like, I don't think that, like, even if UCLA, like, even if no matter who the quarterback is, like, I think they're going to be able to throw the football. I think they're going to find openings. Like Coastal Carolina is not as good as they were the last time they played at UCLA. Now, offensively, that was their bread and butter with Chadwell, and during his tenure. They did run a really fun offense with him. They're 55 overall in Betarank last year, 52 in effective rush, 47 in effective pass. Like, it's a really fun offense. It's going to be interesting to see what they actually run this year and what they're good at. UCLA, of course, like, we do like the defensive coordinator hire, and I think that that will help. But they were at 62 in effective rush last year, which is definitely the better number. Like, Coastal Carolina is going to present you with a lot of interesting run looks. The question, of course, for UCLA is the back end defending the pass. We do have questions. They were at 91 in effective pass last year. And they appear to be paper thin on the depth chart this year as well.
I'm going to take Coastal.
Okay. I
think UCLA wins this game. I think they score points, but I think to your point, right? I think the hire on paper looks good, and I hope it is. And I think it's going to be better than what they've had with Musgrave and Azenaro, right? But I think both of those hires ended up being on the field, just bad selections.
Yeah, I mean,
I still think that. Ahead. Well, yeah, I don't think UCLA. Well, not I don't think I know UCLA hasn't recruited well on defense.
Yeah,
and if you're giving me Chadwell for one more year, I just see this game where Coastal just hangs around and they make it dumb, dumb in the best possible college football way, where you're like, this is the best, like, this is so stupid, why can't you stop this team?
Yeah.
But I think UCLA is going to turn around and do the same darn thing on them. The over here is 65. I mean, I think this can get out of hand in terms of how many points are scored. And if you're going to give me 20 or 21 of them from Coastal. I think UCLA can make up the most of that on there, and I think they're going to put up a ton of points in this game.
Oh yeah, I think UCLA's going to. I think the only thing that's going to stop UCLA from scoring is turnovers.
Give me Coastal, and I'm for sure going to be on the over. I think the over is low here, and it's high because it's 65. But for this game, I just think there's going to be a ton of points. It's going to be a fun back and forth game. And one of the things, regardless of who the quarterback is for UCLA, Chip Kelly knows when to run the ball. That's just, he knows when to do that. And I think they're going to do that. And if it works, he's not going to stop doing it. And in fact, I think he would prefer to do that with a freshman quarterback if that's what they're going to throw out on the field, which is pretty much what it's looking like. So, give me Coastal. Give me the points. I'm taking the over. What do you think, Rob?
I'm going with UCLA. Call me crazy. I think I have that much faith in Chip Kelly running the football down their throat. I think the new clock rules are going to speed things up a little bit with the way the Bruins are going to run the ball in this game. The engine that made this Coastal team work was Jamie Chadwell's offense. I don't know what we're going to get out of them. It has to be really good for this team to work.
Yeah. That makes sense. Okay. Well, we'll see. We disagree on that one, but I see where you're coming from. We'll take a look here. A few more games to get to. Oregon State, San Jose State, USC, Nevada. We got two teams that are playing right now that are actually going to be playing next week. So it's cheating a little bit. But that's okay. And then we're going to go to all the teams that we didn't cover in our conference previews. We'll do that right after this. All right, we're back. Go on the back half, back nine of the Pac-12 here. Oregon State. Let's do Oregon State. All right. Number 18 Oregon State, which is stupid, by the way. That's so dumb. Number 18 ranked Oregon State preseason comes into this game. They go on the road to San Jose State on a Sunday, Rob, 12:30 p.m. on CBS, national game Sunday. And they come in as a 17.5 point favorite against San Jose State. What do we have? I mean, we're watching this game now. We kind of know a little bit about San Jose State, but what do the numbers say about them last year? What are the projections? And then we'll kind of go into Oregon State.
Well, I mean, they're a pretty effective passing team. I mean, they were at number 66 overall on seventy-six overall on BetaRank last year. They were at 66 on offense. Coming into this year, we've got them. We've got them projected at 73, so a little bit of improvement. We've got Oregon State projected at 17. They finished last season at 16 overall. But Oregon State, like we've talked about, like I think that we like them to improve. They were at 35 overall on offense last year and were incredibly one-dimensional. They were on offense. San Jose State, they were at 83 overall in defense last year. They definitely struggled. They didn't have a big run pass split or anything like that, though. What they struggled was drive efficiency. You could put together long drives against San Jose State. I feel like we're cheating a little bit. We have seen the first half against USC for the San Jose State team. I wouldn't say that it's been anything beyond that would blow us away versus what we saw last year from the San Jose State team.
Okay. One of the questions I have, like you mentioned, they're in the 80s on defense.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming the rush defense is in the 80s too, or what was that number?
Yeah. So their run defense, their pass defense and run defense graded out at 82 overall, both. The Beavs should be able to come in and run the football pretty effectively in this game. I will say what we've seen from them versus USC so far is they've been fairly aggressive in trying to get after Caleb Williams. I think our questions of whether Oregon State's going to cover, some of it's on the offense. I think it's much more for me around the defense. Cause Cordero is good. He's a transfer from Hawaii. He can move. He's got some decent wide receivers. They were at 32 in effective pass last year. And of course the Beavs lose a lot in that secondary in particular that they're going to have to replace. Like we talked about, I don't think the defense falls off the map, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them more in the high 20s, maybe low 30s than I would, see them in the top 10 again. Now, what San Jose State did not do great was run the football. They were 102 in effective rush. And the Beavs were good against the run last season. But, like, the main thing you have to do against San Jose State is you've got to contain Cordero. Now, they did it. I would say, like, I thought they did a pretty good job last year when they played mobile quarterbacks. But, I mean, just from watching USC struggle with that in this game, like, that is that's a big problem when you play San Jose State.
The biggest matchup here, like, so... To your point, I think Oregon State is going to control clock and control this game through the run. Like they're going to be able to run the ball. And what will be interesting for me is, I mean, I think San Jose is going to stack that box and try to stop it as much and force DJU. So like we're going to get a real good feel of what DJU is in terms of quarterback, like immediately, because that box is going to be totally stacked. And what his wide receivers are those, the bummer is we're not going to have the all 22. I want to see if those wide receivers actually get open because that's my biggest hesitation. I don't think they're that good. Yeah. But who knows? Maybe you got a wide receiver or two that ends up breaking through. We don't know yet. On the other side, I just like, and we talked about this off air, like, you know, in the live stream, but basically I was going to take 17.5 before I saw this game against USC because I want to see it's on the road, but I want to see Oregon State's defense prove it. They lost a lot of players, seniors, NFL talents, transfers out of the program that went up to play to better programs. I just think that San Jose State is going to be able to put it like 17.5 is a lot. If this was 14, I think I'd take the Beavs. If you're going to give me an extra 17 and push me past the key number, I'm going to take San Jose State. I'm fascinated by this game. Like, of all the games on this, I mean, there's some really interesting ones, but like this is the hipster game of the year, like or week one.
Right?
Can Oregon State hang with San Jose State? Can they step on the throat and really keep going? Because if they do, like I'm immediately impressed because like San Jose State isn't a monster. It's not like you're going out and playing Florida at home, which is what Utah is doing. We'll get to that, but they're a good enough team where if they really take it to the house, then that's great news if you're in Corvallis.
I mean, Betarang's got this at 16, you know, almost at 16.5. I'm with you though. I like San Jose State here. I think that I think Oregon State's gonna pull away. I think it's probably around 14 points feels about right. If they can get it above 14 and get it to three possessions, then that's wonderful. Like, good for you guys for nailing that down. I just think the San Jose State team, like, this is Cordero's second year in the system. I think they should be able to get out there and, like, I think that they will be obnoxious and put up some points, you know, here. And to your point too, like, Oregon State's really got to prove it. Like, I think they're gonna run the ball fine. Right. And I think they're going to run the ball against San Jose State fine. But can you actually like get eight guys out of the box, you know, with DJU? You need to.
So speaking of this game that's going on right now, let's move to USC, who plays. They're going to be the kings of the Mountain West, Rob. They play Nevada at home. They are a 38-point favorite against Nevada. And look, like, we're watching USC at this moment. Obviously, they're having struggles. They're getting the cobwebs out. Let's see what happens. I think it's beautiful. Like, I'm so curious to see what the line is later after this game, because I think it probably dips down a little bit.
Yeah.
But this Nevada team, as I recall, was pretty garbage last year. Is that
they were
is
horrible.
That
and then they've had, I mean, they had a coach resign, like, coming into the early season. Like, there is definite turmoil. So, yeah, like, I think people could overreact to USC, what's going on with San Jose State right now. Nevada finished at 124 in Betarank last year. They were 126 on offense, 116 in effective rush, 119 in effective pass. I mean, really, really bad offensively. They also they also were at 117 on defense in Betarank, 114 in effective rush, 112 in effective pass. Now, USC has not looked sharp against San Jose State in good parts of this game, I think they're gonna get it figured out, and I like them, particularly after what is likely going to be a bit of a disappointment against the San Jose State team. I like them to come out and actually put it to Nevada.
I totally agree. I think this number comes down, so I would not bet this yet. I mean, you can bet it right now. But if you're giving me three more points or pushing me past a key number, I'm totally taking it. I just think that USC is just going to roll and smoke this team. And I would be curious to see if the defense gives up more than 10 points. This defense is terrible. But Nevada is terrible. And like you mentioned, if you haven't been following this, go ahead and read the reports on what's going out in Nevada. It is a disaster. Yeah. And I could see this team just rolling over and giving up 60 points and like, that's it. And then, we might have to plant our flag on this early. Like, no spread is too large for this Nevada team.
Well, cause like, I mean, Norvell left because there were significant questions about like commitment to football amongst the administration. And like, I think those have continued and we were about to talk ourselves like USC is about to go down and score again, but
yeah. So hopefully this line goes down a little bit, but yeah, give me 38. I think this offense is way too good for what Nevada's had. This is going to be one of the worst teams in the country, Nevada. All right. We're going to go back to the teams that we haven't covered here, Rob, and just try to highlight a little bit of what we have learned from them. Let's start with the biggest game of the week in the Pac-12, which is Florida on the road at Utah. The bummer here, Rob, is we don't know what the health is of Cam Rising. And I think that's going to make a really big deal. We saw in the past last year what happened when Rising wasn't in the game. I heard reports at a camp saying that Bryson Byrne is still the quarterback. If that's the case, I'm going to light a couch on fire and then mail it to the University of Utah Athletic Department, because that is unacceptable. Either you have not recruited well, or you have not been able to develop somebody outside of Cam Rising, and that is worrisome. It's a little hard to pick this game because we don't know. I think if Rising is in this game, 7 is like a godsend because, you know, they're going to move the ball. I don't think Florida is that good, but what do the numbers say about Florida this year?
So BetaRank has them projected at 19. They weren't great last season, but they were a little better than their. I mean, like a lot of teams in like a really good conference like the SEC, like you're going to take some L's. They've recruited really well, of course, at Florida. It's at a 12 overall in their recruiting ranking. What kills them is they're just not returning much. They're at 113 in returning production, 102 on offense, 115 on defense, of course, like total turnover with Anthony Richardson moving on. They have a new defensive coordinator in, which I thought was interesting because like the coordinator, Patrick Toney, that had come with Billy Napier had sort of been Billy Napier's secret sauce when he was at Louisiana. So they're retooling on defense. They were at 38 on defense last season. Their offense was a little bit better. Their offense last year, and part of it was, I mean, a lot of it was Anthony Richardson. Their offense was at 15 overall in BetaRank last season. They were at 9 in effective rush and 37 in effective pass. Now this Utah team we talked about, like they were at number 3 in effective rush last season. They were at 17 overall on defense. 48 in effective pass. That's look, I don't expect, and you shouldn't expect, like Napier prefers to run the football. We shouldn't expect them to come in and like, you know, throw the ball all over or anything like that. So I don't think that this is still a pretty good matchup, I think, for Utah's defense, but they themselves, I think, like I like their front 7. I think they have a shot to be really, really solid against the run. And that could really help them in this game. But to your point, right? Like, man, without Rising, like it's really hard to project this defense from Florida, which finished at 38 overall last year. They were 24 in effective rush, 64 in effective pass. I just think that they're going to be better. Like the talent level is there. New coach, you know, new defensive coordinator coming in there. Like I'm not going to project them to be a top 10 defense, but I think them getting closer to like 25-ish is very reasonable. It could be a long night if Rising's not there against this defense, right? Like, and that's not.
I think they'll absolutely stop the run, right? Like, I think that they'll be able to. They have the players. They're going to be able to stop the run, and then if you have to put it on the shoulders of a freshman quarterback that like can't break through, or on Bryson Byrne or whoever, I forget the he's a walk on. And we've seen him. Like, I watched him. I'm like, that's trash. I'm turning the TV off. Like, this game is over. Like, that's how bad it was. And look, we've all been there. Like, you know, better quarterback than anybody in my family will likely ever be. Right. But you know, when it comes to high level college football, he's just not there. On the other hand, like, I'm not going to force you to pick on this because we don't know who the quarterback's going to be. But if it is Rising, I'm pounding Utah because you're giving me a couple extra points. And I do think he's going to be able to move the ball. And I think that when we're talking about, Graham Mertz being the starting quarterback at Florida against Utah's defense on the road in Salt Lake City against that crowd. Like, okay, like, you know, they will run the ball, but I think Utah's good at stopping that run. So if it's rising, I'm on Utah. But if it's not, like, I'm on Florida. I think Florida can really stack the box, and Utah's not gonna be able to move. I mean,
Bannerink has this closer to five. I'm gonna take Florida here. Like I'm with you. I mean, I think Napier has a build in front of him in Florida. I expect him to be a little bit better. I particularly expect him to be a little bit better on defense. Offensively, though, I mean, man, like, Anthony Richardson sort of carried them with his pure athletic talent last season. I'm really interested to see what they are on offense too.
You know, taking a look at Utah this year, just in terms of what they're going to be. I mean, we'll have to go through this kind of quickly, right? Because the podcast goes, but they return like legit production if Rising's healthy, right? Jaquindon Jackson returns. Dude, that guy's 6'2", like 230 pounds, like, which is just, it's just funny to see him run. But like, you can tell he was putting it together. They've recruited exceptionally well at the running back position. So I think he's going to work out, but they have options behind him. I know everybody was focused on the tight end last year, but like, Brent Keithy returns and like, he's good. Yeah. I thought he was when he got hurt, I'm like, oh no, what are they going to do at tight end? Like, LOL, you know, they end up going to a walk-on from San Diego State who ends up being like a second round draft pick to fill in for him. Devon Vele comes back. Look, they're wide receivers, whatever. It is just kind of like smoke and mirrors, but he's decent. And then I think Micah Pittman, who's the transfer from Oregon, who transferred to Florida State, who transferred to Utah. Look, who knows, but he's supposed to be healthy. And I'm curious to see what he's like on the field. I think that there is some real continuity on the line. Yeah. I think they only return one real starter and they have some depth behind that. I don't know. I think this offense is going to be really solid so long as Rising's the quarterback. Does that make sense on your end?
I think that checks out. Like, I think Rising is the one that like really can like be the engine for Ludwig's system in a way that I'm not sure anybody else can really do for the team. And you're right. I mean, they've had enough time behind Rising to develop somebody this time around. And the fact that they haven't, I think, is a big concern. I think if there's one really big concern for me for this Utah team going into the season is that they did struggle so much against the pass last year. And when they did tend to get burned, it was often like against teams that could throw the football against them. Clark Phillips is now gone. Like, the secondary has not been really good outside of Clark Phillips for the past couple seasons. That is my concern. I think the front seven, front six, whoever's on the field is going to be fine. I think they're going to be able to stop the run just fine. I'm not convinced. I have this Utah team as they run into the Washingtons, Oregons, and USC's, provided, of course, that like Caleb Williams can stand upright. Like, it could be a little bit of a problem. I mean, like, even Arizona, like, I mean, they got Arizona last year in a rainstorm in a 5-fumble game, but like, otherwise, like, Arizona is a team that could potentially like cause them problems with their ability to throw the football, particularly like if Rising spends any time, part of the time of this year, hurt. That's it. Like, this Utah team, like, you'd rather be bad at stopping the run in the Pac-12 than bad at stopping the pass. And you don't want to be the team that is like super quarterback dependent in this league and has the very thinnest of quarterback rooms. But that said, like, I think they'll still be really good. But
that was where I was going to go, because I think their safeties are going to be fine. Yeah. But the corners are where it does get like that. And that's why I was going to go in on Utah if Rising is healthy, because I mean, I just don't trust Mertz farther than I can throw him. This cornerback room is interesting. Like, their key player is an Ole Miss transfer who started three games last year. And after that, I don't think they're all that good. Now, they've recruited super well. They have like four guys that are four-star freshmen from 2022 and 2023, but we're going to see them probably if we don't, like, if they're on the field. I think that's highlights the weakness in that cornerback position. And that's something absolutely to watch. Like, that's the weakness of this team. I still think this team is great. Yeah. Like, this is going to be a really fun, awesome Utah team. But if there is a weakness, and when you look at this conference at who's going to light them up, there are legion in terms of some of these quarterbacks.
It's been a while since they had a safety like that was in the first couple rounds of the draft, right? Like, I mean, and it's been, I mean, like, they've, like, I think that the, The rushing defense has been really good, but they've struggled to get the passing defense going. I mean, the pass rush going, I should say, too, right? Like, they haven't had a defensive lineman that's really been like a guy that you would talk about as like a first five round draft pick in a while either. So I think there's some, like, I think that there's still some improvement. Like, I think as a unit, they're still pretty good, but I mean, overall as a defense, but there are some weaknesses.
Let's move over to Colorado, who is a 21 point underdog on the road at TCU. So I went down the black hole here, looking at who on earth is on this team, where did they come from? And I am still amazed. Like, there was a Tennessee transfer that got kicked off of ASU's team like 2 days ago. And then the next day he's in full pads, like, you know, giving a war cry on the Colorado feed. I'm like, holy goodness, who knows what's going on here? But before we get into Colorado, let's talk about TCU, because they lose a ton. From a team that, I mean, obviously, like, you know, exceeded everybody everywhere, including Sonny Dykes' likely expectations in terms of what they were able to do. But totally different team. And what do we have? What do we have in the Horned Frogs?
I mean, the biggest thing, of course, is that they not only lose their quarterback, they lose a ton of production. They also lose their offensive coordinator, who's now the new OC over at Clemson. I really do like the Gillespie hire that he made last season at defense. I think they could be even better than they were defensively, and they return a good amount on the defensive side of the ball. They were at 29 overall in returning production, 70% coming back there. I think Dykes, like, the offense is going to be fine-ish. They finished last season overall number 18 on offense. I don't know that they're going to be quite at 18 overall again, but, like, Dykes is a good offensive mind on his own. He tends to make really good offensive hires. I mean, the tough part is, like, trying to figure out, you know, what in the world is Colorado? And I think you may have done more work than anyone in trying to figure out who in the world Colorado is coming into this year. But it's it is truly a really tough one to project and figure out, because there's not a really good, I don't have a really good feel for what this Colorado, you know, squad's going to be in this game. Like, TCU should be, I mean, Colorado is, I mean, TCU is a 25 point favorite in BetaRank. BetaRank doesn't see all of the changes that happen in college. I mean, all of the changes that have
the 50 transfers.
I mean, like, it takes those in as much as Bill Connolly can, like, put those into the returning production numbers. But you also have significant change in the coaching staff, like, really for the better. This is a tough one. Like, I think TCU is, you know, could, and, you know, really should be the favorite by a lot in this game, but it's hard. Like, I would not put money on this game. No.
Like, literally there was 10 returners, I think, that came back from last season on this Colorado team. It might be a few more than that, but I'm not exaggerating by that much. I think one of the things that is, and look, this is tough, right? Because, you know, some of the reading and then some of the podcasts I was listening to. So you go from one podcast where Hithloday is just like dumping on basically what this team's cohesion is to one of the Homer Colorado podcasts. They're like, we have one of the best wide receiving cores in the Pac-12. I'm like,
what?
Like, are you kidding me? Like, take a look at what we have here. And when you look at who returns and where they played, right? So Shedeur Sanders. Oh, Shedeur Sanders, a four-star transfer. Well, he played at Jackson State with, and this was a great point that Bud Elliott talks about. He's like, look, Coach Prime made that team by bringing in talent that was significantly better than anybody else in the conference. So yes, like, and to his credit, he did that. But now you're playing in a Power Five conference, and when you bring players over, what does that look like? I think another point that I'll make on a big picture standpoint is, I know that, like, Colorado sucked. But so did that coaching staff.
Yeah.
And when you take a look at what they were recruiting, it wasn't like they were recruiting any worse than Arizona or Washington State or Oregon State. I mean, like, it's not like the play, they ran off some dead weight, and every team has dead weight, and there's more at Colorado.
Yeah.
But I would say that we're treating this like everybody at Colorado is just sitting around eating potato chips and, like, not practicing it, and, like, had no talent, and they were all walk-ons. And that's not the case. So now they bring in this hodgepodge group of players. Like, Alton McCaskill is a transfer from Houston, who's a pretty good running back. They have Kavassier Smoke, who, like, has a cool name, but really hasn't produced very well at Kentucky outside, like, of his freshman year. wide receivers, they're bringing in, you know, like Southern Florida and UCF transfers. Like, the offensive line is just wild to me, right? You have two Kent State transfers, a Jackson State transfer, a JUCO, a Missouri State, not University of Missouri, a Missouri State transfer. Like, I don't buy it. I just do not buy the offensive line just putting it together. I do think that there's some skill talent. Like, Travis Hunter is legit.
Travis Hunter is the guy.
Yeah. And I think they'll be able to run the ball.
He's the top recruit in the country. He's going to play on both sides of the ball, right? Like,
but how much is he going to play on both sides of the ball? That's the other thing. Like,
yeah, you can't run. He can't literally run all game.
Yeah. So I think you're going to see him at wide receiver, but I think behind him is kind of what you're going to look at more often than not. Yeah. So I just don't think this team is going to put up a ton of points. My worry, though, like, this is a 21-point spread, and they're playing TCU. TCU lost so much. Yeah. I don't think this is the barometer game. I think the barometer game is, like, you know, the next time they play a team that actually has some cohesion, and that's when I think they get punched in the mouth.
I will say, like, you know, TCU hired as their OC, they hired Arkansas's offensive coordinator, Kendall Briles. So they're probably going to run the ball more than they did in the past. But, like, I mean, like, that mix of, like, Dykes's offense with, you know, like, with what the Briles offense was is, like, it's interesting. Like, I expect TCU is going to put up some points in this game.
Yeah, I just don't know what that defense is. I don't know what TCU's defense is going to be. If it's decent, they cover the spread.
I think their defense should be good. Like, Gillespie's a really good defensive coordinator. That was a great hire. He was really good at Tulsa for a long time. And then Dykes made that hire. They return a lot on defense, and they were only at 29 overall last year on defense. Now, I do like Colorado's offensive coordinator hire in Sean Lewis, who they brought over. He was the head coach at Kent State. I mean, this game could just has, like, potential for dumb all over it if, like, TCU futzes around and can't figure it out on offense, new offensive coordinator, pretty much all new personnel, practically, that kind of thing. That has a recipe for problems. But the flip side of it is, like, I do think that their defense should largely be able to give Colorado fits in this game. I also, like, I mean, I'm just going to be, could not be more fascinated to see. Like, I mean, you remember, like, the Mike Leach phenomenon where, like, Mike Leach would just be like, yeah, that was all the players' fault. You know, like, when things went bad, like, it was never his fault. I'm really interested to see how things go when the going gets tough in Colorado. Because I, like, TCU, like, even if they don't cover this 21 points, like, they should be hit at least 17.
Yeah, I'm talking myself into taking the points, and here's the kicker, is I don't think Sanders lets this team stop, like, playing in the first game. But, like, there's too much at stake for him and for this team. I think they try their tails off until the very end, and that opens the door for a backdoor cover.
That's true.
I think there is a moment where they just get waxed. I don't think it's this game. I think this game gets a little sloppy, a little weird, and they try to save face at the end. So I'll take Colorado. 21 is a lot, and I do think that there's some talent here. But keep a lookout for that offensive line. If TCU's all over the place and Sanders, like, hey, welcome to the big leagues, like, that's possible. But if it doesn't happen, then that's, you know, that's interesting, and I'm going to keep that in mind.
I'm going to take TCU. I'm going to do it because I like Gillespie, and I think this defense is going to be pretty good.
Okay. Two more teams here. Go ahead.
No, and as much as I'm not a huge Kendall Briles fan, like, that offense works.
Yeah. And separate the man from the scheme, I guess, you know, on that stuff. Jeez. All right, let's get to Arizona here. They play NAU. We know what the census was last year, minus Dorian Singer and more of T. McMillan, who's going to be awesome this year. They basically return almost everybody. Jaden DeLora, Mike Wiley, their tight end comes back. Their wide receiving core, they replaced Dorian Singer with Montana Lamonius Craig, who was pretty good at Colorado. And from reports, like, look, this line isn't going to be great. And they brought in a couple people that they think can really go out. So I think the offense, Rob, is going to be at what it, like, there's, I don't know, what do you think about this? Like, I think it's going to be the same darn thing as it was last year. I really am not going to be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, look, the offense finished at 32 last season. Like, I think they're going to improve on that number. Their main weakness was in drive efficiency. They were 109. So, like, you really want to see them be able to finish drives because they were all big plays last season when they put up points.
Yeah.
They had a huge run pass split. They were at 14 in effective pass and 82 in effective rush. To your point, like, this is the first time that I think you can go through the Arizona two deep and really on the offensive line and say, like, oh, wow, like, there's actually, it's not as thin. Like, it's not great, but there's, like, guys that this staff brought in and, like, recruited and has developed, right? But we should, like, we say that, though, like, Jordan Morgan is a likely first or second day pick, right? And that's just not like, I mean, he's excellent. They moved Savanea out to the outside, out to the right tackle, and right tackle for the last couple seasons has been like, I mean, like, you could
a mess with capital M.
You could speed rush Arizona's right tackle, like, and everyone knew it. Polito, I mean, they're going to play some young guys. Like, Polito's a guy that, like, they got, he's a four-star that they got off the and out commitment to Alabama. Now, how serious that commitment was is an open question. But, like, I mean, like, your guards aren't going to, like, are not, like, I mean, breaking in a guard isn't going to kill you, you know, in college football. I think the wide receivers should be good. I think the Lamonius Craig addition in, like, it doesn't make up for Singer, who is a remarkably talented player, but, like, it's not bad. And I do think that, like, their tight end McLaughlin, he's like as slightly above average as you could get. I mean, like, it's like he does awesome things sometimes, and then he sort of disappears from at points in games too. And then Burnett, like, I think is like, there's been a lot of talk about him in camp. I mean, I think the biggest thing is, and I do think that they have a little more depth at quarterback than certainly they did last year, with Dorman there and Fifita. But Delora, I mean, it is, I mean, I, somebody tweeted out some stats about him, like, being one of the, like, and you commented on this too, like, the sneaky best, like, quarterbacks last season. And I was like, holy crap, what are we talking about? Like,
yeah,
Jaden Delora, like, he is all good or all bad. There's no, there's no just, like, mid Jaden Delora. It is all, like, you are the highest of highs or the lowest of lows, usually in the same game, like, maybe even on the same play. and it's that, like, if Delora can show some maturity, and some of it is, like, the offensive line can help him out a little bit too. But if Delora can show some maturity and get the ball out and cut down on the sacks and cut down on the dumb, this offense could potentially be in the top 15. Like, I think they could be that good. It just depends. Like, I think, like, this year more than anything is, like, McMillan's probably going to have a breakout year. Like, even with Cowing there to take a bunch of catches, McMillan is going to take a bunch of Singer's catches. It's just their ceiling is Delora. And I think they're going to run the ball better too, which is, like, they have an interesting bunch of running backs.
They're stacked. Like, it was interesting. I was listening to the Colorado podcast, and they were talking about, like, hey, we actually have the deepest running back room in the conference.
Oh my God,
and it's interesting because I was like, A, that's not true. There are multiple schools. And second, one of them is Arizona. It was interesting. Hippolyte was like, yeah, I think Arizona would you know, take some umbrage to that. This is a legit good room.
Yeah.
Like, there are too many. This often doesn't happen with Arizona, but there are players on this team where you go, why are you still on this team? Right. Usually that's a Utah or not even Utah. That's like an Oregon, a Washington, sometimes a USC thing. Like, at the running back position, that's the case at Arizona this year. The one thing that worries me though, Rob, one thing to keep in mind in terms of getting this offense to the top 15 is, can they score in the red zone?
Yeah. I mean, they couldn't finish drives. They were 109 and they could get down the field. They couldn't finish.
Yeah. And I think we criticized, Jed Fish for being too cute in the red zone. I think he kind of had to be. I don't think they were able to run the ball up the middle, and that was a problem in the red zone. So just something to keep out, an eye out for there. Just switching to the defense real fast. Like, I'm not sold, man.
No.
Like, I just, they kept the same defensive coordinator, which was a mistake. same thing. This is the same thing that I have said about USC. I put Justin Flo and Bear Alexander together, where when you read stories about these major, you know, high pedigree players coming to your program, and the stories are, he's still trying to figure it out. He's getting settled into the system. No. You were brought here to start and to be the leader of this unit. And that's not the case with Flo. I think he might even be beaten out by like a 3-star, you know, regular player at Arizona. And Bill Norton, who was the Georgia transfer that Arizona was thinking about being like the real anchor, I don't know if he's good. And they lost Keon Bars to USC. Like,
yeah.
I think the middle of this defense is going to be soft, like soft. And that's a problem. I think this team is going to be what this team was last year, with a bad defense and a good offense.
Yeah. Distressing. Like, I think if you were an Arizona fan, this defense, like, not only did they, you know, lose a bunch of guys, I mean, cause they did, like, Christian Roland Wallace, Kion Bars also went to USC. Paris Shand went to LSU. You bring in a guy that, you know, saw the field on special teams for Georgia and Bill Norton. You bring a guy that was like, you know, in many, like, I mean, he had a tremendous reputation as a recruit in Justin Flo, but really struggles, you know, like on the actual football field to play within whatever system he is in. Like, that is his consistent problem, is being able to actually like play within the system. He might get beat out by that former 4-star Washington transfer, Daniel Haemuli. I'm probably butchering that. But not like the fact that, like, and I mean, look, Jacob Manu is like fine. He was not necessarily consolation prize. He was like the door prize with that like group of guys that came over with Fifita and McMillan. He was in that Servite crew. I might have the high school wrong. But he's like an undersized guy. He's got a lot of football smarts, but like, the fact that he's still penciled into smart to start, I think, is a worry. Now, they like Dylan Wyatt. Stukes has actually been decent. The one real positive, I think, to talk about this Arizona defensive coaching staff is that there was a guy recovering from surgery, and they found a way to get Dwayne Aquina on field as a coach. So he's now helping out. So that, like, I still think that defensively they're going to be hamstrung. I think Johnny Manson is the weirdest, most quixotic hire in the Power Five for a defensive coordinator. Now, you can maybe make an argument, and maybe Arizona fans, and I've had many of them make this argument to me, that he's going to pay off in recruiting. And they have currently have a 5-star defensive end from Tucson committed. So if that actually cashes out, then talk yourself into it. But like, I have real concerns. Like, they could not stop the run last year. I mean, if you're an Arizona fan coming in to watch them play NAU, like, not that Northern Arizona was like some juggernaut last season in the FCS. They were at 43 overall. They were a much better passing team. So like, if you're an Arizona fan and like, you did lose to NAU in the recent past, like, you want to see the pass defense be able to slow them down, because they were at 17 in effective pass in the FCS last season. They had a decent FCS defense. They were at 42 overall on defense last season. But like, Arizona should be able to put up points here. So like, if you're an Arizona fan, like, you actually do want to watch this game to keep an eye on the defense. Like, the defense actually needs to show up. This is like what I tweeted out before the USC game that started tonight, is like, we're going to get an idea of what USC's defensive floor is going to be in this game. Like, we don't know what the ceiling is, but we'll have an idea of the floor versus San Jose State. For Arizona, this is going to give you some idea of their floor. Like, they need to be able to come in and actually like slow down or shut down an FCS offense.
Yeah. They scored 21 points. Like, it's already baked in. It's already baked in. Like, it is what it's going to be. It's not going to improve. I mean, it will improve, but it won't. That floor, I think, is kind of,
I mean, you're hoping, if you're Arizona, like, you're hoping the fact that, like, oh, well, they're going to throw the football around, like, that'll help you maybe.
Yeah. We'll keep a look on that. Let's move over to, so the last game of the week is ASU, who ends up playing Southern Utah Thursday. Actually, this is the earliest game outside of what's going on today. Thursday, the 31st at 7 o'clock p.m. on the Pac-12 Network. ASU is very similar to Colorado, where there were so many players that were in and out of the transfer portal. This is a brand new team. The thing that was interesting for me was I had Trent Bourget as like quarterback, and it's Jaden Rashada. Like that was announced a few days ago. What did you think about that?
I mean, I think it's really interesting because, like, look, Dillingham can coach, right? Like, offense. Now, we didn't love the offensive coordinator hire. I'm sort of like, oh, well, Dillingham's still there, so it's probably going to work, right? Like,
yeah.
Off the back of my head, oh my God, they just scored at San Jose State, just scored a touchdown again.
Let's go over 9, man, over 14. 9.
So, anyway, it was a beautiful pass and catch. Like, he laid out and got it in the end zone. I mean, like, starting the freshman, like, it feels like, look, I mean, Dillingham's here for the rebuild, man. So, like, if it's close between him and Bourget, like, go with youth, because, like, you might as well season the kid. I mean, to your comments, like, and I had, like, you know, about Rashada, like, is he that good to where you should be hitching your, I mean, that's like, my concern is like, is he like, because if he had, like, look, he might have a ton of upside, and if he does, then like, let's get the seasoning begun now. Right. Like, if he's got a ton of upside, maybe you're going to take your lumps this year, because you probably are going to take some serious lumps, you know, with him. Cause they were at 53 on offense last season. Like, now their defense was just a freaking nightmare. But they were at 68 in effective rush, 38 in effective pass. Like, I do think that they, like, it's just interesting with Rashada, because, like, I don't know. I mean, he's mobile enough, but, like, it's really hard for me to buy into this, like, really working well over the entirety of the season. I think there are going to be some real rough patches with Rashada.
I think he's, I mean, look, I'm not at camp, but from what I have heard with him was that the offer he got from Florida was ridiculous. It was like a bonkers offer that was way more than a recruit of his caliber should have received. And that was part of the problem, right? That, like, so things started to fall apart with that NIL deal. He ends up at Arizona State. The stuff I've read about him in camp is he's a freshman, is what I have read about him in camp, where he is going to make boneheaded mistakes. And he's also going to run around and do some cool things where you're like, oh, smoke. Like, okay, I see it. Yeah. But he is not somebody that can step in right away and, like, handle an offense like your 5-star, your high 4-star guys. That's where I'm operating from. Now it's interesting. Like, as I was reading stuff about them and like listening about ASU, it's kind of that. Remember last year where my thesis about, or 2 years ago, my thesis about Jimmy Lake was he thought that his offensive line was good because he thought his defensive line was good in practice.
Right.
And so he's like, we're going to run the ball. Right. You're like, no. Like, just everybody sucked. I think there might be some of that here at ASU, where Cam Scatabo, who was the Sacramento State transfer, probably pretty talented. Like, you know, he was playing at the FCS level, one of the best transfers out of the FCS. Where there's a lot of reports about he's the truth. He's really good. And then you kind of take a look and see what's going on here in terms of the defensive line is all transfers.
Yeah.
They had a backup linebacker. They have a Washington State transfer that I don't think started last year at line. I get a little worried about what this team actually is when you take a look. Now, in all fairness, Jalen Conyers at tight end is going to be good. Elijah Badger is going to be good. Giovanni Sanders is decent. Xavier Gilroy, the Idaho State transfer, is supposed to be good. So I think actually the wide receiving core is going to be solid. But everything else around there, I start to really worry.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I have real concerns about this defense because they were horrible last season. They finished at 111 in beta rank. You could absolutely put together long drives against them. They were at 118 in effective rush, and they have to patch that up, but they were 83 in effective pass. Like, I think this is like, and look, I like the defensive coordinator hire that they made. They got the guy from Washington State. But I think it's a multi-year. Like, I think that, like, improvement for them this season is getting into, like, the 70s or 60s on defense. And offensively, like, I could see them tread water a little bit. Like, maybe they get into the 40s, but I don't think they're a 30s offense.
The big worry here, Rob, is the safeties. Like,
yeah.
And if you've played with a team whose safeties are garbage, like, holy Moses. Like, there's just a lot of things that you can throw your head, your pull your hair out on. They're relying on an Austin Peay transfer and a guy that got pushed out of his starting position last year as their starting safeties this year, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
And even on the cornerback position, like, they're starting to JUCO. Now he was JUCO All-American and he started last year. But like after that, I think look at tight end play, look at some interesting running like schemes and look at some stuff in the middle. And I think you're going to be able to move the ball against this ASU team. So when they're playing Southern Utah, if they score 28 points, I'm going to be like, oh, that's actually pretty good. I just, my expectations for what they can do with Rashada early as he's figuring it out as a true freshman. I think that's going to be interesting. I think on the defense, like, the only flag that would be raised is like, does Southern Utah score like a bunch of points? Because I don't think they're going to be challenged really that much here. If Southern Utah scores like multiple times in this game, holy smokes, like, this team's going to be bad.
Yeah, the only thing to watch out for is that Southern Utah could throw the ball around a little bit last year. So they were at 39 in effective pass in the FCS. That's not great, but like, if they're able to, that, like, if you're an ASU fan, like, you have really big concerns about that defense, and like, you'd like to see them be able to step up and shut them down. And to your point, like, you don't want to see them put up much more than like 10 or 14 points in this game, right? Like, if they start to get into the 20s, like, you're in trouble.
And look, I mean, like, I feel weird ending the podcast just dumping on ASU. I think the Dillingham hire is interesting. We'll see if it pans out, but good offensive mind. He has his roots in Tempe, in that Phoenix program, like that Phoenix area. I think recruiting is going to get better. This is just going to be a rocky ride for them. And so I'm not trying to dump on them, like, gloating that they're this, but I do anticipate like a 3-4, 4-8 kind of season, or 3-4, you know, 3-9, 4-8 type of season, because it's his first year and like everybody left. The continuity is bonkers this year.
Yeah. I just think it's odd because I think there's a lot of people that have an actual lot of optimism about this ASU team for this season amongst ASU fans, and I'm not trying to be a jerk. I just, like, I do think that it's a little bit of a longer road. Like, I think in particular, like, rebuilding this defense is going to take a little bit.
Yeah, give it some time. And like, if you can legit have a recruiter in Phoenix keeping those players at ASU, holy goodness. Like, now it's never happened, so right, you know, right. It is what it is, but I do think that if you can get 50% of that, that's an ASU team that's 8-4, that's constantly in bowls and possibly can pop up and get somebody every 2 or 3 years in the conference or whatever. So yeah, I'm optimistic about the program. I just am not optimistic about this year. By the way, Zachariah Branch, holy smokes. So like, we talked about him when we did our USC preview. Yeah. Freshman, super fast. This cat has like saved this game for USC. He's gotten like he's just continues to bring that ball down the field and put USC in a position to actually score the ball. So shouts to him. I'm excited. I want a player like that in the conference, man. It's so fun to get those little guys that are just so fast and nobody can touch him.
No, like he's definitely like, I mean, this USC team is like relying on big plays in this game against San Jose State for sure.
Oh, very, very excited to see what is in store for him and that team. Rob, anything else to plug as we head into the end of this podcast?
No, I mean, I'm excited for the football season. Like, the last ride of the Pac-12, we're going to be here for it, covering it this season. You know, you can check out some preview videos. I didn't get very far this year like I normally do, but that's okay.
And it's hard in the beginning too, right? Because we don't know what these teams are. So we break them down. It's kind of like, yeah, they're kind of like this, but we don't know. And so as the season, I mean, we talk about this every year, but as the season goes along, man, we're going to have this locked in. Like, we will know these teams and we will know their strengths and weaknesses. Right now it's projections, but it's still fun to be able to prognosticate.
Let's wrap it.
Ta-da! All right. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. We will catch you next week.